conceived. Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia.
Too many things we found. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the Divine Dar Williams singer with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns, who actually wrote the lyrics. This is Sluggo, Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. I have shed my Harvey, thanks to Weinstein and the hurricane. And you can call me Sluggo now. That's my hippie name and my baseball name back when I used to play for the Boston Red Sox. We have a great show today, very depressing but powerful and important stuff. We have a wonderful guest, Don Arbor. Don, are you with us?
I sure am. Thanks for having me.
And you're the attorney. I'm missing her name. Look at my screen. I can't find. Is she with us here from Los Angeles?
Yes. My name's Josune Aguirre. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I apologize for being so rude as not to have your name in front of me. And we really look forward to having you on the show. And Joel Siegel, are you with us, buddy?
What's up, Sluggo?
Hey, buddy. All right, so listen, we're going to do two things. First, Don has written a really terrific song. There's a YouTube. Don, what is the link on YouTube?
You can find it at donarbor.com, or you can go to Facebook, Don Arbor, and either way you'll find it. YouTube, Don Arbor, also works, and it's called Everyone Comes From Somewhere.
Okay, it's D-O-N and then A-R-B-O-R, like the treaty. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about Puerto Rico first, because we've got Joel Siegel with us, and then we're going to get into immigration. But, Don, we do want to play your song, The Start. Guys in the studio, can you run the MP3 from Don Arbor there?
Let me be the first to welcome you. It must have been so hard to leave your homeland. I can't begin to understand the trouble you've been through. Just let me be the first to welcome you. Many dreamers came this way before, a long unbroken line, and each one hoped to find the peace and freedom they were longing for. And everyone comes from somewhere. Sailed across the sea, escaping from the wars. They were welcome to our shores. I won't be the one to close the doors. 'Cause everyone comes from somewhere. Everyone comes from somewhere. Whether near or far.
Right, that was Don Arbor singing Everyone Comes From Somewhere. That's the Don is our guest today. That's on YouTube. Tell us where it is again, Don.
DonArbor.com or Facebook Don Arbor or YouTube Don Arbor. It's gotten about 10,000 views in 10 days and seems to be really reaching an audience and resonating.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we're going to deal with immigration in a few minutes. I've asked, and I'm also going to deal with Melania Trump's. You know, this guy is never ending. Melania Trump's relatives, I guess her parents, are here on a green card. You got to be kidding me. But I want to deal first, and both of you can chime in on the issue of Puerto Rico. But we've had a few shows on Puerto Rico, and I want to start with Puerto Rico, if you don't mind. We have Joel Siegel with us, who's been following it very, very closely. Joel, can you give us an update on the horrific situation in Puerto Rico and the latest news? Joel Siegel, are you there?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I just want to say I'm a professional musician and a composer, and that song was beautiful, and it said everything that needed to be said about how this country has turned its back on people who have immigrated. Everyone comes from somewhere, and I just want to give a shout out to your guest here. I'm not capable of writing something that profound, but I'm going to start maybe writing some music with more of a political message. So I just want to say thank you for sharing that song. Puerto Rico, you've got we still have a crisis in Puerto Rico. There's about 83.8% of the island, or over 1.2 million customers, they have power in Puerto Rico. But where they're still having very serious problems are in the mountains and in the rural areas. And the Army Corps of Engineers only has 262 people that are currently on the ground. Now, this is after a major Category 5 hurricane. And basically, the criticism is that the Army Corps of Engineers and FEMA are doing way too little, and the complaints from the Puerto Rican people is they don't seem you can't curse on this phone. I guess I can't curse, but
no, you can't. You could.
They don't give a damn. I'll just say it like that. And
yeah.
So now here's the good news. The last few times I've been on your phone, when I was speaking on the phone, I felt like I was a little bit too much anger came out, but there has been improvement.
Let me interrupt there. You know, these creeps who are putting down the kids from Florida from the shooting,
yeah,
are saying that they're too angry to have a legitimate point of view. And I say exactly the opposite. They're not angry enough. If we're not angry about semi-automatic and automatic weapons going to lunatics who shoot up schools, including the grandson of one of my best friends, then there's something wrong with us. And if we're not angry about immigration, the situation with Josun and Don are going to talk to us about, or Puerto Rico, then there's something wrong with us. So you can yell, you know, this whole mystique about how, well, if you're angry, you're not rational and blah, blah, blah. Forget about it.
I appreciate you saying that.
You can't say Harvey. Seven deadly words, but your anger is more than welcome. So go ahead.
Well, then I'm going to go ahead and just be angry. You're looking at American citizens, and the statistic that I have is that 30% of the Puerto Ricans still do not have electricity. And I got Anna Blackburn, who is one of the leaders of Dr. William Barber's Poor People's Campaign. Her mother is in the mountainous area. What they're doing in Puerto Rico now is they're rationing electricity. So for 1 week, you can turn your electricity on. Then the next week, you have to turn your electricity off. Because so it's like rationing food or rationing water in many, you know, areas of the island. Now, Tesla could go in there right now, Elon Musk, along with FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers, and create a solar microgrid. Your show is called Solartopia. We've got the technology. We've got, you know, plenty of money. And we could put the power on so that the 100% of the citizens had electricity. But I'd like to know, whether you're in California or I live in North Carolina, you know, how would you do if every week or every other week you turn your electricity off? Well, how are you going to cook your food? What about hot water? So this is absolutely one of the most, you know, evil acts, one of many, of the Trump administration. And then I have to be very critical of the progressive movement. I don't see that they have not stepped up to the kind of righteous indignation that those students have in the Florida high school that with the tragic shooting. The good news, there's a new organization that's been formed. It's called Latino Corazon. We just raised a significant amount of money. We're not there yet. But we are in contact directly with the mayor of San Juan. I'm supposed to be traveling down there with a group of people. What we need to do is shine the light on what's going on in Puerto Rico. You know, we need another Harvey Wasserman article that explains that Puerto Rico ain't right yet. And you, I mean, to have only, you know, 262 people on the ground in Puerto Rico after a category, you know, 5 hurricane, and they keep promising, well, 95% of the power was supposed to have been on in November. And there was a hospital, as you know, Harvey, that ran out of diesel fuel, and Musk goes in there, and within 15 days, through a microgrid, they turned on the power. So, you know, this was a moral outrage, and I met with Congressman Ted Lustaff with several advocates who represent Puerto Rico, and we've asked Ted Lou to introduce a bill that would solarize Puerto Rico. I'm planning congressional briefings, planning on going down there. I'm asking Dr. William Barber of the Moral Monday movement, now head of the Poor People's Campaign, to go down there. I'd like to do a press conference with some celebrities with Dr. Barber. He's very receptive. He cares deeply about this because he's now leading the Poor People's Campaign. But we need to raise holy hell, get a bill passed, start doing, we need press coverage. And we need people to realign themselves with the Puerto Rican people until they get their electricity back on, until we rebuild every inch of that island. Richest country in the world can't rebuild on a territory wrong.
Yes. Okay, so, and you know, it is an outrage. And, Joel, I'll take your advice to heart, and I'll write a piece over the weekend, and you can look at it, and we'll put it out Monday or Tuesday. How's that?
That's beautiful. Anna Blackburn said that if you could do it, she says that would be the most important thing that we can do for the mayor, who we're in touch with, and for the Puerto Rican people, because she feels the people of Puerto Rico feel like the media has abandoned them and that the world has abandoned them. And you've been the only person to consistently publish, you know, stellar A-plus, you know, journalism on Puerto Rico. You're one of the reasons why Latino Corazon even formed, because I sent your articles to donors and I sent your articles to members of Congress and their staff, every one of them, and
all right,
the grassroots. So you have no idea of the positive impact that you had, Harvey, because we didn't have anyone else to write any other articles like you were. So thank you very much.
Well, you know, as a writer, it's like hearing, it's like getting a Yiddish term naches from your children. So
naches,
I greatly appreciate that, and I will do a piece. And I want to tie this into immigration. You know, people don't come to the United States to get cable. You know, their homelands are ravaged by our imperial armies and other factors. And the United States is, of course, a history of opening its arms to people from around the world. And so, Josun and Don, you are working on this issue. And let's start with you, Josun. You are also in L.A. with me. Tell us, and Joel, if you please do stay with us, because you're a great social justice activist, and I want your commentary as we go through this.
Yeah, I worked on immigration. You know, Congressman Connors was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and I got to work on immigration for many years, and I'm still working on it right now. So thank you.
So thank you. And Josun, if you will tell us, please, give us a little sketch of yourself and what you do, and then tell us where we're at now with immigration in this country.
Well, that's the million dollar question.
Are you asking me?
No, Josun. Josun?
Yes.
Please, take it away. Tell us, I know you're an immigration lawyer, and we Don has recommended you highly, so if you'll tell us where we're at and what you're working with, we can proceed. We got a whole 45 minutes left, and we can really cover the territory.
Of course. Thank you. So I'm an immigration attorney. I work here in Santa Monica, and we're a pretty big firm here, Wolfsurf Rosenthal, but we also do quite a bit of pro bono. Right now with the political climate, we're working a lot with the Santa Monica College to do a lot of the DACA clinics. And
wow. Uh-huh. Are there students? There must be students. Are there DACA students at
DACA
Santa Monica
students.
Community? Okay.
And, you know, we're taking it one day at a time. Policy's changing every day, so we just have to be on our toes and be prepared to help our clients as best as we can. If that's just to preserve the record, then that's what we have to do. But we have to stay diligent.
And tell us, what is the situation now with the DACA students? Are they being harassed? Is the immigration officials coming to get them? What's the basic reality on the ground?
The past few weeks, ICE has been going to various places of employment where there's a majority of immigrants working. And so even if they're DACA and they have the right to be employed, they are feeling harassed. There were, you know, ICE raids at the Grove, at a lot of 7-Eleven stores. It's just been rampant, and even if they have proper work authorization, they obviously feel that they're not wanted here. And we've seen it with our clinics. Students are scared. They don't want to show up because they don't know what's going to happen. They feel rejected, even though Santa Monica College is, you know, a pretty liberal college. They're trying to help their students as much as they can and trying to promote inclusiveness. It's still tough, and I see it every day.
God. Don Arbor, where are you, and how are you plugged into this situation?
I'm based in Berkeley, California, and I wrote this song, Everyone Comes From Somewhere, as a welcome song for immigrants, also to honor my own immigrant roots. Three of my four grandparents were born in Eastern Europe, and the one I knew the best, my grandmother, Goldie, came in the hold of a steamship when she was 15, spoke no English, became a garment worker on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, had a small farm in New Jersey that later became the suburb where I grew up, married a carpenter, and lived in Newark, New Jersey. And I benefited personally from the welcome that my grandparents received in the United States. And when I hear people speaking negatively about immigrants coming to the U.S., it affects me personally. I feel that it's not warranted, that we do a lot better with compassion and empathy than we do with hostility and exclusion. And I don't think it's just for the benefit of the new immigrants. I think it's for the benefit of ourselves, that we're happier when we're empathic. Our society needs the immigrants that come and make up part of the fabric of society. As one of the examples of that, I learned recently that of the 800,000 registered under the DACA executive order, over 200,000 of them are in California, and 5,000 of those are teachers in the schools of California. To imagine that we would have a program that would deport 5,000 teachers is unfathomable to me as far as the negative impact on communities, on the families of the students, of the teachers. It's cruel. It's not justified. There's no reason for it. And what I see is that our government is currently trying to use the DACA Dreamers as a bargaining chip to try to get a wholesale change in immigration policy that would cut down our immigration population by 50% per year and would end the programs of family reunification, which is likely the method by which Melania's parents came to the United States. So there's an irony and contradiction there. But generally speaking, I think that a song can reach people at a level where words and debate don't necessarily get to. And for me, songwriting is a way that I try to express what's going on for me in a way that reaches other people.
Well, I hear that Melania's parents are really bad hombres. Have you heard anything like that? Sorry,
I haven't looked into their personal history, but
right.
I have read about the questions that people are not answering about their status.
Well, Trump's grandfather was an immigrant with connections to the mob. So, you know, Joel Siegel, you want to jump in on this?
Well, it is pretty amazing what you just said, because my I also had a side of family who are immigrants who are also connected to the mob. So maybe one of your family members, you know, knows one of my family members. Yes.
I hope you were
just
insulted by that.
Three quick points. Number one, building a stupid wall is not going to solve the problem of immigration in this country. Since 2000, Mexico actually has had a much more robust economy. So there's actually more Mexicans leaving the United States and going back to Mexico than they are coming here. The biggest problem is from Central America, where people are leaving violence, extreme poverty, and rape. And by international law and even U.S. law, you have to grant asylum to people who are fleeing for safety. So there's about 500,000, it's a big backlog for folks who are seeking asylum, and then they're waiting to be adjudicated. But the real issue, I think there's really three issues. Number one, we need a path to citizenship, and George W. Bush was actually for a path to citizenship, so we can make sure that those who are undocumented can become citizens. Number two, we cannot build the stupid wall, because there's other points of entry that people will come through, and it'll ruin our relationship with Mexico. And then three, if we did a Marshall Plan, instead of spending all this money on a wall, if we did a Marshall Plan of Central America and dealt with their unemployment crisis and dealt with, you know, their economic crisis, they would not have an incentive to come to the United States, just as we rebuilt Japan and Germany after World War II. They stayed there because they had jobs and ended up kicking our butt in the auto industry. So we have this policy completely twisted and wrong, and those who are suffering – are the people who are waiting, you know, for their asylum, and then people who are being pushed out by ICE, and especially young people who go, when they go back, they could be raped. Many of them were witnessed, you know, to murders. But without people, some kind of an organized citizens movement to change public policy on both Republican and Democrat side, I don't think it's going to change that much.
Well, let me point something out here. Well, the situation in Latin America. First of all, the United States is doing the one thing that's most important to reverse the trend of immigration or to stop people from coming into the United States, which is legalizing pot. Because, you know, if we legalize marijuana in this country, the drug war is going to get cut significantly. And that's what one of the things that's been driving people out of Mexico. You know, 30, 40,000 people have been killed in the drug wars in Mexico and Central America. And once we legalize pot, as is happening, thank God, you know, I'm in California now. It's totally legal. I ride my bike down the bike path along Venice Beach. It's like riding through a cloud, you know. So that's going to help. But the bad economic situation and the bad human rights situation in Central and South America, where all these right-wingers are complaining about the immigration, is because of the United States. I mean, we, dollar diplomacy, we have been sending our troops into Central and South America since the 1890s, destroying all forms of democracy, completely raping and pillaging their economies, and putting in death squads. Most recently, in Honduras, where the Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, and Barack Obama, when he was president, overthrew the rightfully elected government in Honduras and turned the whole place basically into a death camp, for God's sakes. And then we wonder why these people are trying to come across the border. It's because we destroyed their country, as we did in Chile and so many other, Nicaragua, El Salvador, so many other places. So I personally do not believe that we have an immigration problem. I have no problem with these people coming in. Their impact negatively has been vastly overestimated, and their positive impact has been vastly underestimated. We only have an immigration problem because Donald Trump and the right wing in this country use race and nationalism to divide people. I don't see an immigration problem. I don't think we've had one, frankly. You know, the United States was completely open to all immigrants from the time the country was formed until 1881. When we banned people from China, and then 1907, people from Japan, and then we put in a big, filter in the 20s. The bottom line is we don't have an immigration problem. The right wing has a political problem, and it's just something that they want to use to divide people, as far as I'm concerned. And if we stop destroying the legitimately elected governments in Central and South America and allow those and stop the drug war, and allows those countries to get on their feet, people wouldn't want to come here. I mean, they have cable down there. They don't need to come to the United States. And as you pointed out, Joel, we're having reverse immigration. At least historically throughout the whole history of the United States, at least a third of the people who come here leave and go home. They either don't like it here, they get enough money, whatever the case. And just for the record, by the way, all four of my grandparents were immigrants. They were Litvaks. My father's parents came from Latvia, and my mother's parents came from Lithuania. And thank God they came here, because if they hadn't, their children and grandchildren would have been wiped out in the Nazi Holocaust. Josun, do you want to jump in here and give us some more detail on what's happening with people in the Santa Monica area?
Sure. First, about the asylum issues, you're correct to say that there's a backlog and adjudication is taking forever. However, there's a new policy now that the first asylum application in is the first to get interviewed. And they're trying to get rid of maybe fraudulent asylum cases, because after you have an asylum case pending for so many days, you have the right to work if you apply for it. So that's one thing. Second, this whole chain migration issue is just a laughing stock, because it just came out today that our First Lady's parents are here on a green card. And how are they here on a green card?
I love that. It just seems so great.
Yeah, it's really frustrating when you're trying to explain to your client this rhetoric about chain migration, and then our First Lady, lovely parents are here on a green card. And send how are back. They here? Well, she's a U.S. citizen now, so that means that she's eligible to apply for them, and that's most likely what happened.
But she wasn't born in the United States, right?
No.
Melania, where she was born where?
In
somewhere else.
Yeah.
Czechoslovakia or some Eastern European country.
Yes.
I love that. I think that's fabulous. And there's no doubt that Trump's grandparents were...
Slovenia.
Slovenia, there you go. Well, it was probably was Czechoslovakia when she was born, and now it's Slovenia.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just awesome.
So do you think ICE is going to break into her parents' house and round them up and send them back?
It's just a laughingstock. Even today, Trump said that he wants to punish California by taking ICE away and CBP.
Oh, send me. Get him out of here. Get him
right?
out of here.
Yes, please do it. Please do it for being sanctuary cities. But he's saying that if he takes it all away, crime is just going to go up.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's what they said about legalizing pot, right?
It's a publicity stunt, but it's just...
I hope he does that. That would be wonderful.
A lot of people would be happy, including myself.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, did he really say that? He said he was going to take away ICE in California.
Yes, he said that today while they were supposed to be talking about the horror that happened in Florida.
Oh, God. That's amazing. Well, I guarantee, I bet you anything, Jerry Brown comes out and says, yeah, take him away.
Yeah.
That would really be good. So what is the daily impact of Jersey in Santa Monica? It's kind of like a reign of terror, isn't it?
It is. People are afraid, and they feel unwanted, and it's just so unfair because the students that I talk to and our clients are DACA recipients, this is their country. They were brought here when they were, some as young as a few days old. And it's just awful to think about the idea that you would be deported to a country you don't even know and that you would feel enslaved.
Guys, just unbelievable.
I
was born in Boston, and then when I was two, we moved to Ohio. So, maybe the troops will come in and force me to leave Ohio and go back to Massachusetts. That wouldn't be so bad, actually. Anyway, Don Arbor, what are you seeing in Berkeley?
Well, the same, we have a new mayor, Jesse Aragin, who's of Mexican-American descent, and Berkeley is justifiably known for its progressive politics, and Mr. Aragin is no exception. In fact, I think we have one of the most progressive city governments in the country. Certainly, he's whatever local measures can be taken to not cooperate with ICE, he would take. But there are obviously forces greater than city governments, and he can't protect people from raids that are going to take place if the federal government decides to do them as they are in other places. I also wanted to mention that I saw there is a connection between what Joel was talking about in terms of the low amount of the low regard for Puerto Rican residents and the low regard for Central American and Mexican folks, and that is that they're not Norwegian.
Well, listen, I've been watching the Vikings on Hulu. Have any of you seen the Vikings? I mean, it is the most nonstop. I mean, they're fantastic shows. They're beautifully written. The characters are spectacular. But it is like nonstop slaughter. I mean, these people kill each other at the drop of a lutefisk. If this is what we're going to get from Norway, man, I love the show. It's just gorgeous, and it's absolutely, the writing is, I'm watching it for the writing. The quality of the writing is unbelievable. But there are 30, 40 people killed every hour. And if this is what we're going to get from the Norwegians, I don't know, man. maybe they should go back to Norway. So, Joel, what's your
Can I just mention, Harvey, that Norway's come a long way since the Viking days, and that they're right now a pretty forward-looking country. In fact, my wife, who's a psychologist and a writer, has been interviewing a guy who's in the Norwegian Parliament, who's one of their leading progressive environmentalists, and has written a book about how to get messages across that will be helpful in getting people to change their ways. And it's something, especially with your own personal Solartopia bent, that you might be interested in, and I'd be happy to send you a link to that later on.
All right. And what's the name of the book?
You know, it's on my wife's desk. I'll get it after we're done.
Okay. So anyway,
She's been raving about how progressive Norway is on these issues, and that we could learn from them. So I don't want to get them stuck in the Viking ages as still stuck there.
Well, I got to admit, though, I'm very much in love with Queen Lagerfeld. Lagerfeld, as I'm sure the guy watching the show, but what can I tell you? So, and women, some of the women would be too, but here's what I want to ask, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but Berkeley and Santa Monica, for God's sakes, I don't know which is further left, Berkeley or Santa Monica, would be a pretty close race. Could you ever imagine the local police stopping the feds from arresting people? Could we ever have a confrontation between local public safety authorities and the feds over this? Could you ever envision that in Santa Monica or in Berkeley?
Speaking for
stopping
Berkeley,
them, no.
I can't imagine
not cooperating,
that happening.
Yes,
I can certainly imagine a policy of non-cooperation, which is San Francisco and Berkeley's stated policy. But as far as getting into the equivalent of a civil war between local police and the feds, that doesn't strike me as a likely possibility. I don't know, Justin, what do you think?
Joel, you're in North Carolina. We're in a prayer there, but I don't think. But, you know, why not? I mean, at some point, it was same with pot, you know. I mean, the Fed, we have obviously a federal government that's been taken over by, if you'll excuse the phrase, a fascist, and a local governments that are actually in tune with what the local people want. Could you ever I'll restate it so I can be a little more clear, and then, you know, you can take it for what it is. Could you ever envision the police force in Santa Monica or in Berkeley surrounding and preventing people from being deported by ICE?
I would hope so.
Oh, what do you think, Don in Berkeley?
Well, I think that there are sanctuary areas where people can stay somewhat out of sight of ICE, but I don't see that the police of Berkeley are going to get into a confrontation with federal authorities. That just it strikes me as upping the ante to a point that would be very unlikely to happen. But I do think that our local policies on providing sanctuaries and not cooperating will discourage.
Harvey, I wanted to make a comment as well.
Okay.
We'll discourage ICE from being able to do as much damage as the feds would like.
I can't hear the others call. I don't want to talk over them. Is it okay to speak now, or should I wait?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
You said something that you're the first journalist, by the way, or even the first person who has, you know, consciousness that just told the truth. You know, you hit a Hank Aaron home run or a Dr. J slam dunk. We don't have an immigration crisis. It was made up by, you know, the far right in order for the white nationalist vote. And that kind of, you know, dog whistle, or I don't know, it was more bullhorn than dog whistle. But if you want to look at, you know, this idea of false facts, you know, Trump, of course, is the king of false facts. The false facts was that we had this crisis of Mexicans coming over the border. And, you know, what you have, the real crisis involves like thousands of migrants coming from Central America. They call it the Northern Triangle. That's El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. And they're like, what they're fleeing is brutal gang violence, extreme poverty, or malnutrition. And then roughly half of these migrants are women and young children, and they're escaping these very desperate circumstances. And they are facing the real possibility of death or rape if they stay. You know, and others are fleeing extreme poverty in remote regions where the education ends, like right around the sixth grade, and families are limited to one meal a day. So do we really want to have a policy where we say that we're going to send these people back to be raped? I deal with this about every other week. And we have a huge crisis in where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. North Carolina has a very large immigrant population, and I'm constantly involved in going to courts and raising hell and protesting that ICE doesn't deport someone who might be gay from Mexico. And if they go back, you know, they'll be beaten up, or a woman who might be killed because she saw the murder of her father. But the real question, I think there's two questions, and that is, what is in 2018, have the Democrats articulated an immigration policy similar to Representative Gutierrez that will actually work? And the answer is no, they have not. And we have to ask ourselves, well, why? Are they placating the right wing to get their votes, these so-called Reagan Democrats? Or have they embraced the idea that we do have an immigration problem, which no one has really ever said? It's sort of been made up. I mean, the jobs that immigrants are taking are jobs that most Americans in North Carolina, for example, they're not going to pluck the feathers off of chickens in chicken factories. They're not going to, pick tomatoes in California in 105 degree heat, or even getting hotter with climate change. But where is the Democratic Party, especially Nancy Pelosi, who's a friend of mine who I worked with for 13 years? What is their policy in 2018 compared to the Republicans? I'd like to know if your experts on the phone have any idea what's the policy. What are we?
Well, yeah, I mean, don't get me going on the corporate Democrats. We'll have to go another 2 or 3 hours. But Joe Soon or Don, have you had any take from the Democratic Party?
Well, I was at an event yesterday where Dianne Feinstein spoke, and she said that she plans to introduce a clean Dreamer DACA bill that doesn't have any bargaining for a wall, or bargaining to end family reunification, or bargaining to lower quotas. So I think that's a step in the right direction. I agree that we don't have an immigration crisis. I agree that what we have is people using it for political purposes to try to divide and incite their base toward hostilities that would lead them to vote for people who make those kind of statements. I give some credit to Pelosi for her 8-hour speech on the floor of the House to recount the stories of DACA citizens or would-be citizens and the difficulties they've gone through and what they've contributed. I don't see an overall policy of saying that we don't have an immigration crisis. I agree that would be a good thing, but I do at least see that there's no comparison between the evil that Trump and the right wing are trying to foist on us on the one hand, and the modicum of compassion that I see from Pelosi and Feinstein and at least the California Democrats.
Joe Soon, do you want to jump in on that?
Sure. So I think our immigration crisis is that we do not have a path for citizenship for the undocumented children, or the undocumented that came as children and their parents, so DACA and DAPA type cases. And in regards to the immigration bills, last week 4 were introduced into the Senate floor and 4 failed. There was a few bipartisan ones. There was ones that just allowed, a pathway for citizenship for 1.8 million undocumented immigrants who came as children, and no money for a Trump border, but that still failed. It seems like everything is failing. So I just don't know how we're going to come to an agreement and what the Democrats can do to push a clean DREAM Act.
Well, the Democrats could get a spine and stop taking corporate money is when they could do. I'm going to say the magic word here. This whole situation comes from one magic word, and that word is empire. You know, we never talk about the fact that we are living in an empire, that we have troops all over the world, that we have denied the countries throughout Central and South America, as well as other places in the world, the right to have their own democratically elected government. And that this has happened as recently as, under Obama and Secretary Clinton in Honduras. And if you look at the disaster in Honduras, it's stereotypical of the reason why people have to come to the United States. The United States destroys their country, and they're left with nowhere else to go, and now we're going to kick them back in there. It's horrifying to me. And, you know, we're still in the era of dollar diplomacy and imperial assault. The only president we ever really had since the 1890s who announced those policies was Franklin Roosevelt with the good neighbor policy. And thank God he did it, because we wound up in World War II. And our back door, had been hostile to us, it would have been a very difficult and different situation. But these policies are continuing. And this is why people have to flee. It's the same as now Europe is facing with the Middle East. All these refugees are coming. They're a direct result of the American assault on Iraq in 2003. The whole Middle East is in chaos. Refugees are flooding into Europe, and it's because of what the West has done with Syria, Lebanon, Libya, all these other countries. And this is our chicken come home to roost. So you and Josun in Berkeley and Santa Monica, tell me exactly what does it mean to be a sanctuary city? Can you tell us, give us a definition? Josun, you're a lawyer. Tell us what the legal ramifications are of Santa Monica and Berkeley being sanctuary cities.
So it's Los Angeles, really, that's a sanctuary city, or Los Angeles County that's trying to be. But what it means is that Los Angeles will not cooperate, so they won't have their police force cooperate with ICE or with CBP officers. There will be a lack of cooperation.
Well, what does that mean? Does that mean ICE?
So let's say there's an immigrant who's, pulled over for not having a driver's license. And they find out, he's undocumented. What the federal government wants them to do is that they want them to then either give that information to ICE or hand them over to ICE. To be a sanctuary city means they're not going to provide any of that information. They're not going to cooperate, and they're not going to make it easy for ICE to come in.
Good.
I think it's great. Why should they? Nothing makes them, it's not a requirement. I just don't get it.
Well, why can't the Berkeley police or the L.A. County police arrest ICE for kidnapping? Sorry.
Because there's this federal laws, and always trumps state law.
Uh-huh. So when California secedes from the United States, will our local police forces be able to arrest ICE for kidnapping? Sorry. Okay. This is a totally false crisis. It's a fake, political dance by the mobster in the White House. And I'm glad that there's some kind of resistance. Is the resistance strengthening? Have you seen wavering from Berkeley or L.A. County, or are people more committed now than they have been before?
I think they're more committed now.
Don?
I certainly see strong commitment in my area to protect the Dreamers and not to have such an exclusionary policy. And also, we have a statewide, we have an attorney general here, Xavier Becerra, who is of Mexican-American descent and is very strongly in support of California being a sanctuary state and not cooperating with the White House on its policies to deport Dreamers or to be, as they call it, taking the shackles off ICE so that they can arrest people regardless of whether they have any criminal background, which was a reversal of the policy under Obama that if there were going to be deportations, they were going to focus the limited resources on people who actually had a criminal record. As you may know, if to qualify under DACA, for example, you can't have any criminal record whatsoever. So the false equivalency that DACA dreamers are somehow equated with MS-13 or gang members is so wrong-headed and intentionally misleading. It's abominable. But California, for example, our Supreme Court justice called out ICE for having instituted a policy of going to municipal and county courthouses. And Josun, you may know more about this than I do, but as I understand it, ICE was going to courthouses where people had to make an appearance for some routine traffic offense or having to pay alimony or whatever the matter was, and the ICE would show up and conduct arrests and deportations. And our Supreme Court justice spoke out about that, and last week I read that ICE was going to stop doing that. Do you know anything more about that, Josune?
Yes. So ACLU brought suit in regards to this issue, and ICE director always said that that's not their priority, that they have not been doing that. But we know for a fact that they have been doing that. It's been reported, and there's shown such an increase in ICE presence in local and state courts. So they need to know what's going on. Now it seems like they're backing off and realizing that it's problematic, and they're just getting, you know, bad press, essentially, from it.
Unbelievable. It's really astounding.
So at least,
Joel,
at least something, Harvey, you know, to answer your question.
Don, go ahead.
Do we see a strong resistance? Yes, we do. Is it everything we'd like? No, it's not. Is it having some positive impact? I think the answer is yes to that. And I think that the real issue really is going to be, can we win a House of Congress in the fall? And can we stop this Republican wave of hostility and dog whistle politics that we've experienced from gaining further traction? We're stuck with it for the next 7 months, but politically, if we can stop them in the House of Representatives and at least put some roadblocks up, that would go a long way toward changing the politics.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And what really needs to happen now is what happened in Pennsylvania. You know, the Democrat-Republican divide in the congressional elections for the whole century really has been slightly leaning to the Democrats. And yet the Republicans, through gerrymandering, which they pulled off really a coup d'etat in 2010, has given them the House. I mean, I lived for many years in Ohio, which is about 51 or 52 to 48 or 9 pro-Democrat, and yet 12 of the 16 Congress people from Ohio are Republicans. And we just won this court victory in Pennsylvania, and North Carolina is one of the worst of all the gerrymandered states. And, we will certainly win. The Democrats will certainly win the popular vote for Congress nationwide in 2018. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The question is how badly will the gerrymandering still be in place? And we have to, that's what's really been holding us back. And, you know, we're looking with great terror now at the possibility that Anthony Kennedy will resign from the court, which would give him another, a moderate right winger. This guy they put on the court is a complete nightmare. What
Gorsuch.
Is his name?
Gorsuch.
Gorsuch. Horrible.
Yes, he is a nightmare.
You know, we almost wish that Scalia was still around. At least Scalia was interesting. This guy is a corporate zombie. But anyway, we're running out of time. We're almost done. This has been a great show, you guys. Thank you, Josun.
Thank you.
Don and Joel, thank you very much. Thank you, crew in New York. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Conceived. Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.